Well, it is 10:30 straight up, and we are live now. You just heard a pre-recorded segment with candidate Sean Butler. Live in the studio right now, I have candidate Ben Carpenter. Hey, good morning.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
Can you hear okay? Let me turn this up a little bit. Does that work for you?
Yeah, it works good.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for coming in. I really appreciate it. I haven't had a chance to talk with you at length about this campaign. How are things going with your campaign?
We're doing very well, picking up momentum just at the right time as we're heading into the election.
Mm-hmm. That was a close race with
Mr. Ogle.
Ogle.
It was a very close race.
Yeah. How did that work out with you and him?
Well, you got two good conservative candidates, and the people were pretty evenly split on which one they wanted to see go forward. And by 11 votes, I won out.
Yeah. Have you met your general election opponent, Ms. Butler?
I have.
Yeah?
Yes. We've shaken hands and spoken briefly.
Oh, okay. How'd that go?
It was good. Cordial conversation.
Mm-hmm. Did you guys talk about... have you guys faced off at all in any kind of...
We met and faced off at the Kenai Chamber of Commerce at the primary, mm-hmm. Before the primary election, but we haven't had a formal general election meeting of any sort. Haven't talked policy.
Oh, okay. Well, you got to listen to some of her recorded interview there, and then I distracted you with talk about peonies.
Yes.
Anything that she said you'd like to respond to or talk about a little bit? Or
I guess one of the first things and one of the biggest things I think that people need to be aware of, especially in this state where the independents, so-called labeled independents, and I really appreciate the way she articulated the conversation of labeling people. I think we have gotten into a political mess by applying labels. But the important thing to remember is that even if you are an independent, going to Juneau or going to city council or going to the federal government, legislature or whatnot, you're never going to be able to achieve anything by yourself. So you're going to have to pick a team to participate on. And that's not a bad thing. I know that there's a negative connotation to having political parties and wanting to just do what the party says and that type of thing. And those are all valid concerns. The point of the matter is human beings group together, like-minded human beings who want to accomplish something, they team up. We know this all the way back from elementary school and playing dodgeball. We know that we want to be on the strong team. We want the guy with the strong arm on our team.
Right.
Or somebody who can catch the ball, right?
Yeah.
We just naturally team up. And so it's very important for the voters to realize that even if you are an independent, you have to pick a team that you're going to participate on. And I'm very open with the team that I'm participating with. That's the Republican Party. That's a conservative team most of the time. And that's what I'm going to participate with when I'm down in Juneau is the Republican team. And those who label themselves as independent have to choose one of the teams that participate down there right now. That's what our government is. That's the reality. You've got a Democrat team or a coalition, and you've got the Republican team. And my opponent has picked the opposite team. So we can call ourselves, label ourselves whatever we want, but at the end of the day, when we get down there, we will be working with a team to accomplish something, and we can't do it by ourselves.
Mm-hmm. I did ask her specifically, I think, when that came up, if she was running just because she didn't want a D next to her name, in an area like this, pretty conservative, it's pretty rare for Democrats to win state office. I can't think of the last one. Might have been Hal Smalley, really, in the seat you're running for. No, it was a different district set up then. But she said it was, to be able to pick and choose once she's there. What do you think of that sort of thing? Is your knowledge of the system and the party system such that you know what you're getting into by staying with one team, as you say?
Yeah, so one of the great questions that I've been asked, especially from Republicans, is are you going to participate in the caucus, the Republican caucus down in Juneau? And I think this kind of leads into or addresses what you're asking. And I've told them, yes, I will. I have a requirement to represent the people who elected me. I also have a requirement to go down and participate as best I can on a team, right? If we're going to accomplish what we have set out to accomplish. The problem that I have is when those two clash, right? And now who do I work for? I don't work for the team. I work for the people who elected me. So I don't think there's going to be a problem. I think that the turnover in the House is such that we have a brand new crop and we have conservative, much more conservative leanings than we've had in the past. And I think we're not going to have an issue. So I intend to participate with the Republican caucus and as long as I can, and as long as that is not conflicting, what they are asking me to vote on is not conflicting with what the constituents want, then we'll all be able to accomplish what we're looking to do. It is, you know, if I can speak just briefly to the independent versus Democrat question that's been raised here. It is a strategy. It's a strategy being played out statewide for those that are paying attention to take those who are former Democrats and label themselves as independents and then run as an independent in districts that the Democrat doesn't have a chance of winning in. And so we see that in this district for those who are paying attention. We'll see how the voters respond on November 6th.
All right. Conversely, you have someone like Paul Seaton, who is running as a, well, I guess maybe it's undeclared or independent, but because he's getting a challenge from the conservative side because he joined the Democratic coalition along with Representative Louise Stutz and Gabrielle Ledoux of Kodiak and Anchorage. Where was I going with that?
And I think I know that that's probably what's in the back of the mind of the Republicans that have asked me the question of whether I'm going to participate in the caucus or not. They don't want to elect somebody who's going to do the exact same thing. And I can tell you that I stand on my convictions. I know what I believe in, and I know that I'm not going to cross party lines to do something that is against my convictions. So, it is very important. It is very important that people understand that the individual you send is going to support a team, and that team needs to be successful down there. And the lines in this race can't be any clearer. We have two separate teams that are going to be represented down at Juneau, and your choice matters as to which one you're going to empower to work for you.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that both you and Ms. Butler are both former military.
We are, and there's a number of new candidates that have had both in the primary and that have made it through the primary and are moving forward that have military service, and it's encouraging to know that to see that those who have served in uniform are continuing to serve in another fashion after they have hung up the uniform, so to speak, and that's good to see. I really mm-hmm. appreciate it.
Do you want to take a phone call?
Sure, let's go ahead.
All right. Let me make sure I got all these buttons pressed right. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. Hey, listening to you here, was listening to the radio all day. I don't want to pick a fight with the guy there, but I do not appreciate the fact that what I hear from him is if you're a Democrat that's now registered as an independent to try to get elected, you're somehow doing something disingenuous. And if you're Paul Seaton and you joined a Democrat, you're somehow do something wrong. I've known Paul Seaton for probably 50 years, and he is one of the most credible people to ever hold office that I ever had the pleasure of voting for. So please ask your candidate or whatever there to be a little bit more respectable. A Democrat that registers it as an independent or an independent that has Democratic leanings, there's not a dag-nab thing wrong with that. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling. Do you have a response?
Yeah, I agree with him. There isn't anything wrong with it, and I didn't say there was. I was just providing information to make sure that people are informed.
Mm-hmm.
That is a strategy that is being played out, is to call yourself an independent when you are formally a Democrat. Those are the facts. I can't make them any softer. That is just the way that it is. And there's nothing wrong with that. as I said, there's two different teams. There's many different philosophies out there. I'm not of that persuasion. I don't believe those things, but I'm not considering them wrong in the sense that we have a political argument that we're working out here.
Sure, sure. Where did your life philosophy and conservatism grow from? Was it raised on a farm early, or?
Well, that's a really great question. Probably one of the most in-depth, personal questions I've received so far this election season. I would have to say that my worldview is shaped by being a Christian and being a rural member of a community. Both when I was a kid, my whole family has been rural. I think those are two real big things that shape my worldview. Serving in the military has shaped my worldview. I've seen a lot of the world, a lot of ugly things out there, and I would love to be part of a conversation that prevents that from happening in our own country. And I think that those are some of the big ones that shape my worldview right now.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier, before we were on the air, about your military service. Maybe you could recap that?
Sure. So I spent 4 years in the active duty Air Force and transitioned out of the Air Force and to go to school. And while I was in school, very, very briefly, that happened, 9/11 happened. So I continued on with school, and end of 2004, I was commissioned into the Army. There was a period there where I was watching the news and had buddies in the military, and I really felt the calling to go back in and continue to serve, but in a different fashion than what I was doing before. So I was commissioned as an armor officer and got sent to Fort Knox to learn how to fight on tanks. And by the time I had went to a unit to deploy to Iraq, the tank fighting was over. So I didn't spend any time deployed on tanks doing what I was trained. I was asked to do other things and had to be very flexible and learning new skills and dealing with people in different ways. And so I went over there. My first deployment was as a convoy security platoon leader. And that basically meant, and this is during the surge, if you remember that time frame, surge in Baghdad, where they were building the cement walls between the Shia and the Sunni. We were escorting big convoys of big trucks and protecting them as they hauled various items, vehicles, water, cement barriers around the country. So that was my first deployment. The next two deployments were completely different. One was advising the Iraqi Army brigade commander there. I was a commander of a joint security station in southern Iraq, and helped fill in for a transition team that was leaving at that time, military transition team that was advising the that brigade commander. Third deployment was just as we were pulling out of Iraq. We were one of the last units to do a road convoy out of Iraq as the American forces were, quote, leaving. It's amazing to see now that we're still over there. And then after that, I spent 9 months in Afghanistan advising as an executive officer on a 12-man team, advising a police district. The police chief there, we were embedded with his team and were helping raise their skills and so that they can sustain themselves and secure their own population. So those are the kind of the things that I did while I was in the military deployed.
Wow. What did you do in the Air Force?
I was a crew chief on F-16s. I was an aircraft mechanic.
Oh, wow. Man,
Completely different than the rest of the stuff that I did.
Yeah, you don't see M1A1s getting off the ground too often.
You do not. Yeah. No, they need to stay on their tread.
Yeah. When you were overseas there, and you mentioned you worked with a couple of different groups of locals, did you come away with any opinion about or any position on whether Muslims are evil and want to kill all Americans, or it's some fanatics that you weren't dealing with? What was your impression of the people?
Hmm. Well, like our country, there are fringes on both sides of the political spectrum, and that's no different in their country as well, or in that world, in that culture as well. The individuals that I dealt with mostly were of uniform variety, although there were opportunities to go to meetings of the community. And I, you know, it's a eerie feeling to know that you're shaking hands with somebody who is on the U.S. terrorist watch list, but that individual is in a elected position within his government, right? We still have to work with them, even though they're not friendly enough to come into our country,
right?
We still have to find a way to work together. And little did I know that that may, not that my opponents are terrorists in the legislature here, but working with somebody with opposing viewpoints is, I didn't realize that I was in training for the future.
Well, hey, yeah, battleground training for president. That's it's been a long-term thing.
Yeah, it's an interesting. I heard one military officer talk about relationships in a real interesting anecdote. U.S. or Western world looks at relationships kind of like the honeybee. There's a hive. Honeybees have their purpose, and they go about doing their purpose in an individualistic manner, and the hive thrives. And the Arab mindset is more like a spider on a web, and each one of the web strands is a relationship, and some strands are more important than others, and so they cultivate and maintain those relationships. And if that means they lie to one to save face to the other, that's a more important relationship, then that's totally acceptable in their culture. And so maintaining that web of relationships is how they, that's just the worldview that they see life through, and it's different than the way that we see it. So,
oh yeah, you got to imagine it's going to be, you know, being over there, and you know, you have like you mentioned the Shia and the Sunnis. You know, they're just I don't even know what to think of them. Their relationship with each other, I understand where it's from, but you know, you would think that in a place that's, you know, you correct me if I'm wrong, but miserable spots in the world is so hot and desolate that, you know, they'd make more of an effort to get along.
Well, their worldview is also a lot longer. That may not be the right word, but it's generational. They have, they hold grudges, and they hold tribal grudges, I guess you could say. So the relationships go on for generations, and they tend to look at problems in generational, in a generational time, as opposed to what we do. We don't tend to think that way. So what happened to my grandfather as an Arab impacts how I deal with somebody here. And it isn't, I mean, I don't know how people treated my grandfather. I'm not even privy to some of that information. So it certainly doesn't shape my worldview, but it certainly does in that culture. And the people that I worked with largely, especially military and police, uniformed people, they're just trying to do their job and, do the best that they could. And they wanted what's best for their family and their kids, and, weren't all that different than myself, in that regard. So, mm-hmm. Extremists exist in both cultures.
Right. Were there, so you were saying they were professional. They were professional soldiers and police.
Yes, in the sense that they worked for the government. They wore a uniform, and they were had a task to do in the military or in the police. They would be the professional soldier or police as opposed to a militia or something like that.
Right. But they were, I guess I'm asking... they were trained. They were, you know, trained professionals, I guess I should
add. Yes, and you wouldn't necessarily be able to compare their training to our training. It would be night and day difference of the type of training and amount of training that the U.S. forces do compared to what they do. But that's kind of why we were there, was to help increase their ability to train their own people. So we trained them. We helped them learn how to be better trainers of their own people, so that they can perpetuate that going forward, be able to secure their own country.
Right. You know, I see every once in a while there's a news story, a tragic story out of usually Afghanistan, although I do remember him from Iraq as well. You know, in training local police and stuff, you know, sometimes they get bombed by, you know, somebody, one of their own people. You know, I mean, American trainers have died that way. Did you see anything like that?
we refer to those as suicide bombers, right?
Right.
And it's always in the back of your mind when you're out there with the indigenous population. You don't know the enemy. It's the difference between this war and maybe, say, World War II or something, where the battle lines are drawn and you know where the enemy is. Here, the enemy can be look like a civilian and you don't know. They didn't like it either. They being the uniformed people, they were just as much at risk if they were standing around us of having that happen. So, yeah, it's a bad thing. Nobody likes it.
Yeah. Are you hoping we get out of Iraq and completely out of Iraq, as you said, and then out of Afghanistan soon?
I would hope so. I would hope that we will be successful at helping them grow their capacity to be able to secure their countries, and that we can move forward in a productive relationship going forward. The problem that we see is that it's generational, and so it's going to take a long time to change people's perspectives, if it's even possible. The problem is, or the solution is, I would rather see the conflict happening outside my own country than I would on my own soil. And that's just my personal view on it, is if we can take the fight to the enemy and take it where he lives, that's much better than him bringing the fight to us on our ground.
Right, right. Speaking of battlegrounds, have you talked with Representative Chenault about what things are like in Juneau? You've been there a long time.
We've had a few conversations, yes. Nothing super in-depth yet, but I imagine we'll have some more conversations as it moves forward, and especially if I'm successful in November.
Uh-huh. So we have another phone call. Just like take it?
Hi. Go ahead.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm going to take another whack at this. I'd like to talk issues this time. After I called previous and I made a comment to about Mr. Carpenter referring to Democrats as now calling themselves independents, I think that's disparaging it, and he did it again after I got off the phone. But let's switch the topic. In the voter pamphlet, it says that he's for responsibility by criminals. Three strikes, you're out! Exclamation point. I'd like him to flesh that out, and at the bottom of that, of his priorities, return the entire PFD to the people. I'd like him to flesh that out and tell them how we're going to pay for government with nobody chipping in. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Good questions. Go ahead, if you have an answer.
Yeah, so let's take the last one first, since it's freshest in my mind, the PFD issue. As it stands right now, we're looking at, if everything stays the way that it is, we're looking at being able to balance the budget this year because the price of oil has come up. So there shouldn't be any reason for us to have to take a PFD this year, or a portion of the PFD to pay for government. That's reading the tea leaves. We'll see what actually happens. But the concept is, if our state government is going to have a conversation that says we need to take a portion of the money that should be going, that would traditionally go to each individual resident, and we need to pay for government for it, but we don't take a look at the waste and abuse that's going on within each one of our departments, we just kind of turn a blind eye to it and say that's business as usual, that's what people have a problem with. We recognize and we know that government is inefficient, and we're not really doing much about it. That's a slap in the face to then have a portion of the PFD taken. So my response to him would be that the PFD is best spent by individuals, not by government, and that's where it needs to be spent for the betterment of our communities, our families, and for our economy.
I think Jay Hammond might disagree with you.
he kept
saying over and over, rainy day account, rainy day account, and it was only later that the dividend was instituted for citizens.
Yeah, at this point, I'm philosophically opposed to having government paid for by a dividend fund, a permanent fund. I think that the people, or the businesses that are in the people that the people work for, as is the state, you know, you've got, 70 cents out of every dollar that comes into the general fund is oil revenue, or, you know, oil money. It's paying for our government. So, I'm philosophically opposed to a pool of money that pays for government, and that pool of money continues to grow as a fund would, the government's likely going to continue to grow at whatever size that pool of money is. And if you take the dog out of the fight for the people, what is to keep the government from growing at that point? It is necessary for the people to have a dog in that fight to keep government low. So I'm philosophically opposed to maybe what they thought of back in the day. And I know that there were both sides of the issues back then as well.
Right. One of the ideas floated for the permanent fund was it comes up every once in a while under different names. 1% of market value, using that of the earnings, not from the corpus, the big body of money. And then another plan that hasn't really gotten traction in the last, I don't know, 15 years or so, was dissolving the whole fund and paying every Alaskan their share of it. That would solve that problem about, a growing pot of money to that the government wants.
Yeah, that'd make a lot of rich people now, or at least have a lump sum in your checking account. But that doesn't do any good for my kids or my kids' kids that haven't been born yet and want to be in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't think there's probably no political will there to do something like that.
Yeah, not much lately.
Yeah. So I didn't answer his second question, if we have time.
Yeah, three strikes.
Yeah. So we talk about revolving doors and the crime that's happening in our own communities here. Criminal gets arrested, goes to court, and that happens continuously. So we have to put a limit. Our Constitution says there's a principle of reformation that has to be adhered to within our criminal administration policies, but there's no limit on that. So we need to have a limit that says the people are going to have a good graces to let you reform yourself, recognize that you've made a mistake, and change your ways. And it may not happen the first time, but if you're showing evidence that you're not going to reform yourself, then we aren't obliged to allow you to continue your lawless ways. So three strikes, that's where I settle on it. Does it need to be four? Does it need to be two? I guess we could discuss that. But, at what point does someone show their true colors that they're not interested in doing what's right and
being a part of polite society?
Yeah, so that's why I say three strikes. If you're going through the process and you're not willing to change yourself, we each have a choice as to whether we go commit that crime or not. And that's where the personal responsibility is. If you make that choice, go do the crime, and you continue to do it, then we ought to have a law that says you're no longer allowed. You need a maximum penalty to stay away from society for a while and think about it. There's two things that our criminal administration policies are supposed to do: protect the public and deter crime. And right now, it's not doing either of those. So I hope that a three strikes law would deter crime. If the criminal knew that they continue this way, they're going to get the maximum sentence, and they're not going to, the revolving door is closed. That should, I would hope, deter some crime.
Yeah.
And locking them up would obviously protect us, because they wouldn't be available to go do the crime.
Right. Of course, then we'd have to buy more prisons.
We would have to talk about the price of that. Yep.
Yeah. Were you around? You must have been around, maybe you're overseas, when they were talking about the private prison around here about 15 years ago or so.
I was not here.
Oh,
you're right.
Yeah. You know what? We are actually out of time. I can't believe a half hour went by this fast.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Let me give you an opportunity to just appeal to the voters for yourself here.
All right. Well, I am having two meetings. Tomorrow I'll be out in Sterling Community Center at 6 to 8. I'm sorry. I'll be the Funny River Community Center tomorrow night, 6 to 8. And on the 30th, I'll be in the Sterling Community Center, 6 to 8. I would love to meet anybody who's listening, your audience, and answer questions, talk, listen. I was out in Seward last night, and the majority of the time I did listening, and it was a great opportunity. I am a conservative candidate. I'm not trying to win over people that don't see life the same way I do, or are not on my aisle, but I am speaking to people who believe that limited government and controlling state spending is important. That's who I'm appealing to. I think that is important for going forward, and I'm not ashamed of that, or I'm not going to hide from it.
Ben Carpenter, thank you very much for coming in. We are completely out of time here. This is KDLL Kenai.